Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Coming up tonight, Eamon's way, not the Gang of Eight's way.
He was due the courtesy by being the most successful electoral leader of the Labour Party of one of the eight to actually have the courage to pick up the phone and say, this is what we're doing.
And 3 days on, the counting goes on.
I deem Sean Kelly and Deirdre Clune to be elected without reaching the quota.
All to come on The Late Debate after the news from Ray Kennedy.
Thank you, Audrey. Good evening from the newsroom. In the European Parliament elections, Matt Carthy of Sinn Féin has taken the third seat in the Midlands North West constituency on the seventh count. Counting is continuing in Castlebar, County Mayo, to decide the fourth and final seat between Fianna Fáil's Pat the Cope Gallagher and the independent Marian Harkin. Luke Ming Flanagan, an independent, and Fine Gael's Mairead McGuinness took the first two seats. Mr Carthy said the vote for Sinn Féin was a vote against austerity measures implemented in recent years.
The people have sent the government a very strong message. This isn't about personalities, it's not about leaders of parties, it's about policies that are crippling our communities, causing hardship to too many Irish families, and has resulted in an entire generation being forced to emigrate from this state. This message from the electorate is that people want change.
In the South constituency, the counting of votes has concluded, with the Fine Gael candidates Sean Kelly and Deirdre Clune taking the final two seats. Brian Crowley of Fianna Fáil, who topped the poll, and Sinn Féin's Leon Arriða were earlier declared winners. The executive of the Labour Party has announced that nominations for the leadership will close at midday on Tuesday next, the 3rd of June. The board met this evening to begin the process of electing a successor to Eamon Gilmore, who announced yesterday he was stepping down following the party's poor performance in the European and local elections. Gardaí have confirmed the identities of two bodies discovered on an island on Loch Sheelan in County Meath yesterday. The bodies of 32-year-old Owen O'Connor and 33-year-old Anthony Keegan, both from Dublin, had been missing since last month. Gardaí say they are treating their deaths as murder but will not be releasing the results of post-mortem examinations for operational reasons. The US President Barack Obama has announced that America would keep 9,800 troops in Afghanistan after it concludes its combat mission at the end of this year. Speaking at the White House, President Obama said the US would gradually withdraw troops until only a small residual force remained after 2016. The plan, however, will depend on Afghanistan signing a joint security agreement. And the weather forecast, mainly dry tonight with clear spells but turning misty with dense fog in places later. Low temperatures 5 to 8 degrees. And that's the latest news and weather.
Ray, thank you very much indeed. You're listening to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Well, it's Tuesday night and they're still counting in Castlebar. Midlands North West has still one Euro constituency seat to fill. We'll hear from our reporter Cian McCormack there in a moment, as well as Sinn Féin's Matt Carthy, who was elected in that constituency about an hour ago. But first, just before 7 o'clock tonight, the count in the Ireland South constituency finished up. Fianna Fáil's Brian Crowley and Sinn Féin's Leah Ní Riada were elected yesterday, and the returning officer Martin Harvey completed the lineup.
The result of the 12th count, which was the distribution of Hartley's 64,357 papers, resulted as follows. Clune Deirdre plus 5,361, 5361, total 74,307, 74,370. Harris Simon plus 4,747, 4747, total 70,808, 70808. Kelly Sean plus 8,255, 8255, total 121,566, 121,566. No candidate reached a quota on this count. The next operation is the exclusion of the lowest continuing candidate, Simon Harris. As this leaves but two continuing candidates for the two remaining vacancies, I deem Sean Kelly and Deirdre Clune to be elected without reaching the quota.
Well, that was Ireland South just before 7 o'clock tonight. Well, to Castlebar, where about 40 minutes ago the results of the seventh count were announced.
The following is the result of the seventh count, which consisted of the distribution of Thomas Byrne's votes of 64,057. Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin, plus 7,911. Seacht míle ní gaoch agus aon déag. Total 135,046. Cid trucha míle agus dhada sé. Pat the Cope Gallagher Fianna Fáil plus 34,475. Trucha cahar míle cairicéad agus seachta cúig. Total 102,915. Cead is gáim míle ní géid agus cúig. Marian Harkin, non-party, plus 5,658. Cúig míle ségéad cúiga hocht. Total 105,501. Ein cead is cúig míle cúig cead agus éin. Non-transferable papers on this count, 16,013. As the votes of Matt Carty have now exceeded the quota, I deem him to be elected.
And we'll talk to Matt Carty in a minute, but first our reporter Cian McCormack is joining us live this evening from Castlebar. Cian, one seat left. Who will take it?
Well, that's the million-dollar question now, really. But after that count, the gap has narrowed now between the outgoing MEPs, Marian Harkin and Pat the Cope Gallagher, for that final fourth seat. In terms of Fianna Fáil vote management, the breakdown of Thomas Byrne's votes was good. They transferred in big numbers to Pat the Cope Gallagher. You heard the figures there. Pat the Cope Gallagher got 34,475 votes compared to Marian Harkin, who got 5,658 votes. So as it stands, Marian Harkin has 105,501 votes. That's 23,789 short of the quota. Pat the Cope Gallagher has 102,915 votes. That's 26,375 short of the quota. So whatever way it is going to fall, one of these candidates will be elected without reaching the quota, but the gap between the candidates is now 2,586. And the surplus from Matt Carty's votes are now crucial, because those 5,658 votes will be split between Harkin and Gallagher, and then there are 271 votes of a surplus outstanding from Luke Ming Flanagan, and they come into play maybe after Matt Carty's votes have been distributed. So this is really moving fast into the recount territory, because it's felt that Carty's vote could be more favourable to Pat the Cope Gallagher at a rate, tallymen are saying, of 70-30. But the question now is whether he can catch Marian Harkin. So we could, at the end of this, really the end of this count, be talking about only a few hundred votes between the two candidates, and that's at the end of the next count. But as I've said, we're going to have to wait for the distribution of Matt Carty's votes. Matt Carty, the newest MEP for Midlands North West, is here beside me right now. He's got his headphones on and he's ready to talk to you, Audrey.
Great stuff, Cian. Thanks very much indeed. Matt, you're very welcome to Late Debate.
Hello, Audrey. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, and a big congratulations to you.
Thank you very much.
You had a long wait.
We had. It was certainly a long count process. Somebody joked earlier on that governments have been elected, overthrown and secured power again in the time that it's been taken. But I suppose in fairness to the count staff here in Castlebar, they want to do it right rather than fast. So I suppose in that regard, we can't blame them.
At any point over the few days, Matt, did you think it wasn't going to happen? Because initially everyone thought you were going to top the poll. And then once the exit poll and the figures started emerging, things weren't as clear cut at all.
Well, yes. Throughout the last week of the campaign, we had estimated our support in and around 17-18% in terms of the feedback that our canvas teams were delivering. I have to say that we got a little bit of a shock on Saturday morning when the results of the exit poll were announced. It didn't tally with any information that we had, but obviously the exit poll was way out. But as soon as we arrived down in Castlebar on Sunday and we seen the votes mounting, it was quite clear that the actual vote was much more in line with our own state of position rather than what the exit polls had predicted.
But did you underestimate Luke Ming Flanagan and the support that he would generate?
Certainly not. I've seen it from the moment that Luke entered the race. He had huge levels of support, particularly in the West and the Midlands, where he would be well known. And we felt that at one stage in the campaign, we would have asked ourselves, quite frankly, the question whether or not it was possible that both Luke and myself would be elected. But we came back and our canvas teams were coming back very clearly that the strong Sinn Féin counties were holding up solid support, and those counties that we never would have had much support were all returning a minimum of 10% in terms of the support to us. So we were fairly confident. As I said, the only time that we would have questioned ourselves was with the RTE exit poll, but as I say, it proved it. There was no basis, in fact, in that findings.
And Matt, you heard Cian there saying that your surplus, at this stage, it looks like the majority of them will go to Pat the Cope Gallagher rather than Marian Harkin. Does that surprise you?
No, well, the votes that are being distributed are votes that came to me from Thomas Bourne. So I imagine that they're a Fianna Fáil vote that came back to me because Thomas Bourne would be in the neighbouring county of Mead. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that there would be quite a number of Mead people who might generally speaking be Fianna Fáil supporters, but who gave Thomas Bourne their number one, translated to a number two to me, and then returned back to the second Fianna Fáil candidate. But I don't know what the actual count, the count will return. But
absolutely. Well, do you expect it to finish tonight?
I don't know, and to be quite honest, this has recount written all over it. I'm sure the staff here would not thank me for even suggesting it, but I think
Cian has passed out there beside you.
Yeah. Cian's doing Trojan work here, I have to say, on behalf of RTE. He's here from morning to night.
He certainly is. Listen, getting back to yourself and the next 5 years, will you stay the duration in Brussels, or would you be tempted back to stand in Cavan Monaghan in 2016?
No, well, my intention is certainly to stay out the 5 years. As you know, I'm from Cavan Monaghan, as you say. Cuimhin O'Caolan is the sitting TD from County Monaghan, so it's not even on my radar at the minute. I look forward to getting to work with a very strong team of four Sinn Féin MEPs from right across the island of Ireland, and we look forward to getting to work straight away. We're going to be having meetings in the next couple of days in terms of trying to carve out what committees that we're going to be in a position to get sitting on. And then, of course, we set out during the course of this election campaign very clear messages that we wanted to bring to a European Parliament level, particularly in terms of our very firm belief that the austerity agenda that's been driven very much at a European level, happily implemented, unfortunately, by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael governments, but regardless, it hasn't solved the crisis. In fact, in our view, it has actually prolonged the crisis. And when I've been travelling around, particularly the 15 counties of the Midlands Northwest, you know, while I would have always been acutely aware of it, it was stark in terms of some of the towns that you would have travelled into where huge numbers of businesses had closed and where it was literally and genuinely impossible to meet someone between the ages of 19 and 30 Monday to Friday. There is a need for a whole change of direction in terms of investment rather than austerity, stimulus instead of cutbacks. And not only that, but there's a need to have a reconfiguration in terms of how the regions are dealt with. It's no accident, in my view, that those regions that have the lowest or the highest levels of unemployment, the highest levels of poverty, the highest levels of emigration are also the same regions that have the lowest level of government investment, and that needs to be addressed.
But realistically, what can you do about that as an MEP? Very little, I would suggest.
Well, and we've always said that we weren't going to make promises that we would change people's lives overnight, but I do think it's important that these election results in themselves send a very clear message, not only to our own government that I hope they listen to, but also to the European institutions, that the direction that has been pursued over the past number of years has been the wrong one. The Irish people, I believe, have sent a very clear message in that regard. And it is important that we have MEPs at a European Parliament level who are spelling out the realities of the austerity agenda and setting out the realities of what it has meant for the communities that we represent. And then it's up to us. And we have a responsibility, and I take this responsibility very seriously, that the electorate have entrusted upon me to use the mechanisms that are available in terms of European funding and European legislation to ensure that European laws and directives, first of all, don't negatively impact upon our communities, which they do, and particularly in terms of competition law and services directives, but that instead that we try and use whatever influence we now have at a European level. And it's I've just had a cursory look in terms of election results right across the European Union, but it appears that the group that we're affiliated to, the GUE NGL group, will go back much stronger than it had been previously, and that there are other MEPs right across not only bailout countries but other member states who would share our overall belief in terms of the direction of the European Union and where the democratic deficit needs to be addressed, and also the direction of overall policy at a European level.
Okay, Matt. Well, look, congratulations once again. Enjoy your success tonight, and thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me, Audrey.
Thank you very much. That's Matt Carty, Sinn Féin MEP for Midlands Northwest, elected there just over an hour ago. Well, with me in studio tonight, obviously we're going to talk about Labour's continuing problems. John Downing, former government press advisor to the Green Party and now political correspondent with the Irish Independent, he's one of our guests tonight. Just, John, on what we know so far, two independents, four Fine Gael, three Sinn Féin, four on the island for Sinn Féin, one Fianna Fáil. Will Fianna Fáil be very disappointed if they don't get that seat in Midlands?
It will certainly look terrible. A funny outcome in a way. Obviously, as you say, soar away success for Sinn Féin and independents. Strange situation for Fine Gael, because the local elections were hard on them. They sustained quite heavy losses, but those four out of 11 Euro seats take the edge to some degree off the losses. Reverse situation for Fianna Fáil, where they had quite a good election locally, and they're the biggest in the council chambers across the country. However, the very poor return from the Europeans takes some of the gloss off their successes. So, yes, one is potentially now, it would be crazy to call that, mm-hmm. particularly when we're headed for a recount, but potentially just one Fianna Fáil MEP at this late stage in the count is a very disappointing return.
And in relation to Ireland South, where Deirdre Clune and Sean Kelly were elected, Simon Harris eliminated, would you argue that that perhaps is a good thing, that he's a greater asset to the Dáil than the European Parliament?
I think he would be an asset to either, and he certainly will be continue to be an asset to the Dáil. He's one of the great committee performers as well. I think he ran a great campaign and was unlucky. I think, interestingly, part of the reason, which kind of compounds Fianna Fáil's difficulty, part of the reason that Fine Gael won two seats in the south, two out of four, was by default, some of which was due to Fianna Fáil's failure to identify a strong candidate in the north, in the Leinster end of the constituency. They picked Kieran Hartley in Waterford on the basis of his anti-pylon stance. He could be a very good candidate in other contests, but he was the wrong person in that particular race at this time.
OK, John, thanks very much indeed. You're staying with us, of course, until 11 o'clock, because the bulk of our programme tonight will be dominated once again by Labour, and Labour's pains continued in public today. Nominations opened for the position of leader after Eamon Gilmore announced his resignation yesterday. The Education Minister, Rory Quinn, called the actions of the eight backbench TDs and senator who said they would table a vote of no confidence in Mr Gilmore as lacking in decency and courage. Mr Quinn was taking questions from reporters this afternoon.
It's not the Labour way to have put down a motion or threatened to put down a motion without having at least the decency and indeed the courage to contact the party leader, and he's still the party leader, Eamon Gilmore, to say that that's what they were doing. I would agree with Kevin Humphreys.
Eamon Gilmore spoke about the party and the government needing to go into a new phase. What do you interpret that as meaning?
Well, very clear message that has come across from the electorates right across Europe has been the rejection of continuous austerity. That's a very loud message. How can we fix our economy and at the same time raise the burden of adjustment from the backs of ordinary people? And the constraints that have been set by the European Central Bank and others are ones that have to be negotiated. Do we make a choice between democratic stability on the one hand or economic orthodoxy? These are big challenges.
And if you can't do that, do you walk away?
The Labour Party's never walked away. We've put this country first right back from 1922 when Fianna Fáil, or the emerging Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin as it was at the time, refused even to recognise the legitimacy of the state. We stood fast in the 1970s when Sinn Féin and the present leadership of Sinn Féin were murdering Irish people north and south of the border. We don't walk away. We put this country first and we put our values with our political engagement.
Does it strike you though as a spectacular own goal that the Labour Party has got rid of its most successful leader ever when it's actually in government?
I didn't want him to resign. When I met with him privately yesterday, he had already made that decision. He had said to me he had set three levels of support for the measures of support for the Labour Party under his leadership: percentage of the electoral vote, the number of councillors that we would have, and the number of European seats, or one European seat that we would hold. By his own standards, he felt that he hadn't maintained a level of support that met the bar that he had set for himself as leader. And with the typical courage that Eamon Gilmore has displayed throughout his political life, and certainly as leader of the Labour Party, he chose to resign himself. He wasn't given the decency or the space to make that decision in a timely manner. He was trying to contact one member of his family who was abroad, and so he probably resigned slightly earlier than he had intended. That's my interpretation, it's not what he said to me. I resent the way in which the motion of no confidence was suggested. He was due the courtesy by being the most successful electoral leader of the Labour Party. He was due the courtesy of one of the eight to actually have the courage to pick up the phone and say, this is what we're doing.
Rory Quinn talking earlier today. Well, Arthur Spring, one of the seven backbench TDs, joins me in studio now, as does Dr. Niamh Pershale, historian and author of A History of the Irish Labour Party, 1922 to 73. John Downing is here, and we're also joined on the phone by Ray Kavanagh, former General Secretary of the Labour Party, and Phil Prendergast, who lost her Labour Euro seat this time around. Arthur Spring, your direct response there to that scathing criticism by Rory Quinn.
Yes, I've sought to speak with Rory a couple of times today, but I haven't been able to do so yet. And I suppose I'd like to put the record straight as to the chronological order of events that took place. On Saturday evening, it became apparent that this was the worst election that the Labour Party had ever been involved in the last 30 years. And there were going to have to be major overhaul of the direction of the party, and everything was up for examination as far as I was concerned. I didn't say that the leader had to go, but I most certainly said that it was something that had to be considered. And after that, on Sunday, I became aware that a group was forming, and they thought that there was going to be a need to address it as soon as possible. And the next thing that we heard was that on Monday, there was a... While I was in Kerry, I was told that the Taoiseach had summoned the ministers and ministers of state to Dublin. And for that, to me, it looked like there was an entrenchment. Why weren't all the political party backbenchers included brought to Dublin if he wanted to talk to people and make a statement? So we felt completely left out of the loop. And a decision was made at that point in time that a press release would follow a notice to the chairman of the party that there would be a motion tabled at the PLP. And I don't think that we're inconsistent with what Mr. Gilmore was thinking himself. He recognised the problem, but he didn't convey that to us. Nobody in the hierarchy of the party conveyed that to us.
Did you convey to him what you were planning on doing?
No, I suppose the fact that we wanted to have this motion put forward, it was going to take an internal battle in order for there to be a new leader if people were putting it forward. And you needed to build allies and friends. Unfortunately, I don't think I've ever been involved in a game of snakes and ladders in my life, but that's exactly what it felt like. But it wasn't necessary, as it turned out. Mr. Gilmore, the Taoiseach, who's a man, can I say that I have nothing but the height of respect for. This is not a man that was chased out of government due to the fact that he'd done anything wrong by the people. I keep pointing to the statement that Jean-Claude Juncker, who looks like will be the president of the European Parliament shortly, says, we all know how we're going to have to fix austerity as governments. The biggest problem that we have is how do we get elected thereafter?
But is Rory Quinn not right when he says that he was at least due the courtesy, given his achievements for the Labour Party, he was due the courtesy to be told what you were planning? If you expected him to tell you what he was planning, mm-hmm. doesn't it work the other way around too?
If he was going to resign, I think that he had nothing to hide whatsoever, and he could have brought us to Dublin for that purpose and let us know. And I suppose we're dwelling on something now that's really water under the bridge, and I don't think there's any ill feeling between anybody, and I certainly don't hold any ill feeling against Eamon Gilmore. I think that the man has done a great service, and I think that the man was left in a really unenviable predicament when he took power. And
was it just the eight of you involved, or we've heard today that Alex White was also perhaps consulted in this? Did he encourage you to write the letter and table the motion of no confidence?
Audrey, I can't confirm that.
Why not?
Because I wasn't in Dublin and I haven't spoken to Alex. So I don't know that. But what I do know is that there were people outside of that group that also felt that it was appropriate to have that motion tabled. And due to the fact that they didn't put their name to it and they haven't disclosed it publicly, I'm not going to disclose their names here and now either. That's up to themselves to do.
OK. John Downing, it's a mess, isn't it?
What's a mess?
Well, yeah, just the way this has all come out into the public, and just, you know, having Rory Quinn talking about you lacking in courage and decency and so on. I mean, no party wants to have that going on within it.
That's his opinion. But that doesn't constitute a mess. I think the objective outcome would be here, if I can just finish on this, is that the Labour Party is in a crisis and it must ensure its survival. You need a new leader for that. You need a sense of purpose and you need to reorganise. And we will endorse whoever the best person is for that job.
Okay,
did I understand you, Arthur, yesterday? I heard you on radio, but only just in passing. That I understood you to say two things. First, that it was unfortunate that you had sought this no confidence motion and then publicised it, and that also that you were sorry that you had done it at that stage. Is that fair? A fair characterisation?
If I could just, I suppose, elaborate just a tiny little bit. If we had known that Eamon Gilmore was after resigning at 10:30 that morning, there is no way that we would have tabled that motion. And likewise, if Eamon Gilmore had invited us to Dublin, the same as he had the ministers and the junior ministers, I know that we wouldn't have tabled that. And I know that I certainly wouldn't have put my name to anything until he had to say what he had to say.
Okay.
But you have to understand that when we were sitting, especially when I was sitting in Kerry and I saw a group being called to Dublin, and there was another group that didn't think that this was going to work out, that something had to happen. So it was just an unfortunate circumstances.
What is Alex White's role, if any, in this, John?
And my understanding is that, and I believe it has been confirmed, that this is based on stories written by Niall O'Connor and Fionnán Sheehan in the Irish Independent, both yesterday and I think again, again tomorrow morning, that Alex White had endorsed and said that he would resign there was any resistance from Mr. Gilmore. And in the same way as Rory Quinn has criticised the group of eight who tabled this motion, similarly, other people who let's say, have remained loyal to Eamon Gilmore and feel he was badly treated, take a similarly dim view of Alex White's behaviour as they do of the group of eight who tabled the motion and then publicised it.
Niamh, what does this say about the Labour Party and the lack of communication at the very least between the leadership and the backbench TDs and senators and so on?
It shows the Labour Party as being in a very difficult position at the moment. I mean, within the government, if we want to look at, there basically being four men running the government, and then within there's sort of ever decreasing circles of power, and power is being very kept within a very tight circle within groups of people. Then you've got the front bench. The notion that the leader of the party was going to resign and didn't have, I mean, it's just ludicrous, the notion that Rory Quinn is coming out and chastising these people for being rude and for lacking decency, when they don't even have the courtesy to tell members of the parliamentary party that their leader is planning on resigning. And we know in this day and age how quick things move. In one way, it's a side issue. It doesn't matter a damn, really, in the big scheme of things. But it is indicative of a culture that has come about within the party. I mean, there have been times in the past where there have been sort of ideas of cabals around the leadership and a notion that advisers have too much say and, you know, that ordinary members of the parliamentary party or councillors or members of the party are not being given access and are not being heard. And that's an important thing. But certainly the notion that people weren't told suggests a kind of a shutting down, and the manner in which people have been just spoken to as if they were bold children by people like by Rory Quinn and by Emmett Stagg and by others within mm-hmm. within this group, and with accusations of ageism and sort of ridiculous stuff, completely neglecting to look at sort of the key issues of what's going
on. Okay, let me bring Ray Cavanagh in. Ray, you're welcome to the programme. You're a former General Secretary of the Labour Party. What's your view on how this has been handled? Is it indicative of the Labour leadership that you know?
There's a very fundamental and basic problem here about communications and collegiality and trust and the parliamentary party working together. Arthur Sprigg is correct, and I think himself and that little group of people did behave as best as they could, given the appalling circumstances. If there is a mess here, the mess is the careers and the work of scores of Labour councillors who lost their seats rather convincingly on Saturday. Rory Quinn is judging this by a very high level of courtesy and manners, which is typical of Rory Quinn. But we have to see, as Niamh sees, what the situation of the Labour Party now is a situation of absolute crisis. Either it grabs the bull by the horns, goes for new leadership, restores the confidence, first of all, of the parliamentary party and the leadership and of the councillors and of the members, which is very important, and then of the Labour electorate.
How can it do that, Ray?
It's going to be more than that. Well, I certainly think that sort of the beginning of your programme now after the Euro part would show quite clearly that there's a lack of communications and a lack of trust inside the Labour Party at the moment. And if that is restored, it will be one small step towards working in government, standing up to Fine Gael, asserting Labour values, communicating with the general public and winning back the credibility of the Labour Party, which has been seriously damaged.
But how, Michael McNamara at the weekend said the entire front bench needs to go. Do you agree?
Well, I think the unfortunate fact is, and people are accused of ageism over it, there are no young people in the Labour ministers. There have to be people in their 30s and in their 40s, and even that isn't too young. I'd like to remind people that Dick Spring was leader of the Labour Party when he was 32. Mm-hmm. Many of our finest ministers going back have been young people. They have been excluded from this group. Now, naturally enough, you can't sort of clear out everybody of a certain age, but the younger TDs in the parliamentary party have to be given positions of responsibility. They have to be made junior ministers and senior ministers. That will require that people who hold that position at the moment will not hold it after the new leader takes his or her place.
Phil Prendergast, you lost your Labour Euro seat this time round. Obviously, we all remember you a few weeks ago saying very publicly that you believed the party needed a new leader. Do you agree with much of what Ray Cavanagh has said tonight?
I agree with, and good evening everybody.
Good evening.
I agree with everything Ray has said, because I did discuss the issues with Eamon Gilmore, and I did explain that it wasn't personal, but that the issues I was hearing, and you have to, I suppose, put a context, is that I was on the ground from doing a soft campaign from September to Christmas, and then a strong campaign from there on in for this European election, which was to try and retain the seat that had been won by Alan Kelly. So I had an opportunity to meet people, and the anger was absolutely glaring. And I did say to him that my biggest fear was that, you know, there had been an appearance of a chronic inability to deal with the crisis after the crisis, and that I said action was needed ahead of the local and European elections if the party was to save some seats. And that was based on working with councillors that were really are the roots of all parties, and they are the if you like, the people that do the grunt work. And
Phil, did you consult with Joan Burton or anyone else before you made your comments?
No, I didn't indeed.
Do you support Joan Burton for the leadership if she runs?
I would say that Joan has a lot to offer, but this is now going to be a competition, is my understanding. People are going to put various stalls out. They haven't yet declared whether it's the deputy leader or the leader. I'm not quite sure who is doing what. And obviously, I think there has to be a balance of experience, but also giving the head to some of those younger TDs that are fairly dynamic. And I do believe that Ray is correct. He spoke about Dick Spring there and how dynamic he was in his day. And I think that to start treating people that have attained the positions by dearth of hard work to represent the Labour Party at the highest level and to speak down to them as if they're bold children in a school is not the way to communicate. And also that when somebody like me, who's on the ground and was needing and absolutely getting the support from the local councillors and the candidates, that it was going to be important that the views that we were hearing were reflected and heard. And I felt that I had discussed those issues, and I also felt that they weren't being listened to because the macro end of it was being talked about, like the 70,000 jobs.
Arthur Spring, Dick Spring there mentioned him being your uncle, of course. Did you speak to him about this issue? Did you seek his advice on what to do?
What to do? I think if someone could work that out right now, they'd be running the country themselves. I've spoken to him. I can tell you that he was at the count in Tralee on Saturday and Sunday, and I think he's probably of the same opinion as myself, and that would be that there's a crisis here, and we're going to have to get stuck in immediately. There's going to have to be a comprehensive response to it. And we're going to need a leader that's going to have a plan, not only a personality. So, I suppose I'm my own man here as well.
Of course,
and,
I'm
working hard for the last 3 years. And I suppose I'm closer to the fire than he is. And he gives me some advice. But this is something that we're going to have to see firsthand, and I'll make up my own mind of what I'm going to do and what everybody else is going to do.
But if
well.
You're in crisis, and many people agree that you are, is anything going to change as long as you stay in government?
See, that's one of the fundamental questions that has to be asked this week. I think Niamh pointed to the fact that there was four men running the country. I find it kind of ironic, and I was hoping to get a copy of the Memorandum of Understanding here. The country, the programme for government, would actually only be an appendix to the Memorandum of Understanding, which was the Troika's conditions as to how we were going to be allowed to run the country. And anyone that's objective would actually say that. And there were three reasons given by the polls done by RTE as to why people didn't vote against, why people voted against the government of the day. Mm-hmm. And they were water charges, property tax, and the medical card issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And two of three of those, Phil, were signed off by Brian Lennon and Brian Cowan. And there was nothing that we could do about them. But we have been able to alleviate some of that. But that's a hard sell. Rather than €440 per house, as per sign-off, Article 27, anyone that wants to look it up at home there, look up the IMF website. That's very hard for us to do. And I have nothing but respect for Eamon Gilmore, and I know that he put the country right. The budget times that we've had, we've been looking at options someplace between the devil and the deep blue sea were the options.
But what is your own personal thought at this point, Arthur, about that question, about whether you can renew and restore while staying in government?
Yeah, as I go back to what Jean-Claude Juncker said, how do you get popular when you're implementing something that has to be done in order to save your country? My own preference on this would be that you communicate as honestly as possible with people, and that you talk to them as to where the country is at any point in time. And I conveyed this to the Taoiseach within weeks of being elected. I thought that we should have had an ability to convey and communicate with people exactly where we were in the Troika programme, how we were getting out of it, and how people can row in behind this as well, and the country will have a better future. And we were overwhelmingly told that if the people on the streets understood how bad this predicament was and were told it on a continuous basis, well, then the lack of confidence could drive you from a recession into a depression. So ironically, what you needed to do was create confidence in the economy and get it moving in the other direction.
So have you made up your mind? Which end are you leaning towards? Stay in or come out?
I'm going to look at it. And I think one of the most important questions is any leader that's talking about leading the Labour Party right now, there's a budget in September. Mm-hmm. In the 4th of July, we'll find out who the leader of the Labour Party is. We'll break up for the summer 2 weeks later, and then we'll come back and we'll, if the motion that I totally disagree with is that we come into the chamber and we rubber stamp a budget which backbenchers like myself wouldn't have hand act or part in. So if the Troika thinks that they're going to impose a 2 billion adjustment this time out, I think they'll have to think again. And if you remember last year, it was myself and a couple of others that stopped 600 million of an adjustment in additions of cuts that would have been made to people's lives. But there's no thanks for that. It's a hard sell. And if anyone's any recommendations, I'm all ears on it.
Phil Prendergast, what's your view on whether a new leader will make any difference at all, that the only thing that will save Labour, perhaps, is to leave government?
Look, it's like being between a rock and a hard place, to kind of phrase. There's an element of, we've acknowledged there's a crisis. We've acknowledged that people are extremely angry with the Labour Party, but that is partly the Labour Party's fault, absolutely. And I will restate again, it wasn't personal in relation to calling for Eamon Gilmore's resignation a month ago. It simply was that it was getting deafening, the sound of people's anger, mm-hmm. and people's upset. Now, I served my time over a period of 20 years coming up through the councils and being elected and being a representative.
With respect, Phil, we just don't have that much time, and I want to get to the nub of this. Without a fundamental change in policy in the Labour Party, without getting any significant renegotiations or changes or whatever to programmes for government, is there any point in just changing the Labour Party leadership and remaining in coalition?
Well, we're going to have, Pat Rabbit said it himself, we're going to have to re-look at the programme for government, and we're going to have to look at the issues that are really hurting people. And there is little point in making those big changes and going to Europe and saying what needs to be said and coming back and the people on the street still haven't enough money, or they have to make a decision, do I buy the child a pair of shoes or do I pay off part of the ESB bill? We have to deal with people like that, and we have to have a response to people who are now appearing to have to justify their need for a medical card. Yeah. To my view, because of my background in health, I would see that no one should ever have to do that. There should be a simple red circling, and to people that are diagnosed with conditions, there should be a means of notifying the department, and an issue of a medical card should happen in those cases.
Arthur Spring, briefly.
Could I say, Phil, you're absolutely bang on, but we need solutions, and I prefer for the Labour Party to stay in government and see this out. There was one thing there was one thing definitely not said to me at the door. We want a general election and we want Sinn Féin and the independents in charge. Not one person said that to me.
Ray Kavanagh, what's your view on this? I think a senior Fine Gael source was quoted in the Irish Times today as saying that if Joan Burton gets the leadership, the outcome will be an autumn election.
That is not what will happen. But that is exactly the attitude that we would like to engender in Fine Gael, that the Labour Party will defend its own people and that will hold that as an ultimate weapon. The Labour Party wants to be in government because it wants to direct this country for the benefit of its electorate. We are not want to stay in power at any price. Nevertheless, just as Arthur Spring has just said, we want to stay in power, and we want to direct things in a way that really hasn't been done in the last few years. Phil has mentioned about the medical cards. That is the most glaring issue. That was the thing that hammered Labour people on the doorstep. And Labour candidates and councillors just could not understand how our own ministers could stand over this or could be silent over it. It's issues like this that we need somebody strong. And the response engendered to Jane Dawn Burton's possible leadership, I think that's something that Labour Party people should take note of. If she has that much authority and can engender that amount of respect from Fine Gael people, then maybe somebody of that strength is somebody to require now, because we have to turn the ship around.
OK, Niamh, you wanted to come in there.
Well, I think Arthur is making an interesting point in terms of the idea of what has happened over the last 3 years, having been the lack of success that Labour had at the local elections and the European elections, as having been the result of a communication strategy failure. The idea that if people had been how we can get people to row behind us in austerity. And I think that neglects the bigger issues, that there was an issue in how things were done over those 3 years, and there has been a sense in which certain people are. I heard someone say today, a Labour TD, talk about the squeezed middle. A lot of people are squeezed. And this concentration the whole time on this squeezed middle, working class people are having a problem too. Labour seem to have forgotten they exist. They have been given to Sinn Féin. That's their problem now. Labour don't look after working class people anymore, apparently. It's all about the squeezed middle. But there's also the notion that there is no alternative. The TINA doctrine that exists, that Labour won't countenance increasing tax bans, you know, at the higher end of the scale. I heard people talk about flight of clever people, you know, sort of all our doctors and all our senior civil servants will disappear. We can't have corporate tax rates that are appropriate anymore. The kind of things that Michael D. Higgins used to talk about before he left Leinster House. These things don't seem to exist within the Parliamentary Labour Party anymore. It's not a conversation that certainly anyone is having outside of the doors of Labour Party meetings.
Okay, see, Arthur Spring.
There's a point in that I totally agree with. That conversation isn't taking place outside of the outside of the Labour Parliamentary Party. But Niamh, the first two things that happened when we took governance was the people that were after taking a cut from €865 to €765 for doing a 40-hour week, were hanging on by their fingernails. €40 of an increase to them for weekly work was an enormous amount. It's an increase in wages by about 12%, which is enormous. The other thing that we did was the lowest 330,000 paid people in the country. We took them out of the universal social charge, which was imposed upon them by the Independents, the Greens and Fianna Fáil. You can't say that we didn't do something for working class people.
But it's not enough.
I agree.
It doesn't even come close to enough. And it's very, when someone is sitting there on €92,000 a year and has their special advisors in who have been brought in above the cap and all of this kind of
thing.
Who's
this you're talking about?
You have special advisors brought in.
Not the Labour Party.
The Labour Party does, yes. That's correct.
No.
I think you'll find that's correct.
If you can name them.
I'm not going to name them right now, but you know that that is correct.
No,
they were brought in.
If you can name them, I'd be happy to listen.
But we're not going to name them.
I'm not going to name them.
Well, it's a public money. You should name them if you know somebody that's on breach of the cap. I knew that there were some Fine Gael advisors that were breaching the cap, but
right.
I don't know of anybody in the Labour Party that's in breach of the cap.
Well, there are people who are in charge of looking after financial stringency issues who apparently can't get round to signing a little piece of legislation that stops someone getting €70,000 as well. There's incompetence as well. How is it? I have not heard a word about how it happened that a loophole remained open that allowed money to go to a minister having resigned. This legislation,
the severance payment to Alan Shatter.
No one has explained that.
Ray, what's your view on that point by Niamh about that Labour no longer represents the working class, that they are a middle class party?
This is what we were getting on the doorstep, but what Arthur has said is quite right about restoring the minimum wage and cutting down taxes on the low pay. That was done. But of course, the other side of it is not enough has been done, and we haven't demonstrated what we've done. The issue that I mentioned earlier about the medical cards really are an issue for people on lower incomes, even people who receive discretionary medical cards, and that's something that we have to stand up loud and clear on. And we have to be seen again that we will not allow Sinn Féin to take the working class vote ever again, that we will go out and fight for the working class vote, and we will do it on a basis of our achievements in government. It's very easy, I think, to stand back and be critical of some of the government actions, because we now are out of the crisis. But in the middle of the crisis, what they were doing was literally to save the independence of the country. They've done that. We've crossed over that bridge. Now we have to get back to Labour values, and the Labour value is supporting people on lower paid. Another issue, for example, would be the housing issue. Mm. So many people knew what was happening, the housing situation in Dublin and around the country, but nothing really was done about it. It was allowed steamroll until a snowball until it's come to crisis level now at the moment. That's something that has to be tackled urgently. The Labour Party was always marvellous at building houses for the lower pay. We've always produced the best Minister for Health. In fact, I'm beginning to believe that the only party that can provide a Minister for Health that can look after the needs of this country has to be a member of the Labour Party.
Okay.
I can say I've seen them from other parties, and they've all made a hames of it.
John Downing, Eamon Gilmore talks about renewal of government, renewal in government. How can Labour do that while staying in government?
With great difficulty. They're in a very difficult position at the moment. Because of the situation we were talking about at the top of the programme, the leadership contest has got off to a very unfortunate start. The difficulty, Labour have a lot of difficulties to sort out for themselves, but the 5,000 members are also picking the Taoiseach, the Deputy Prime Minister, and they're picking five cabinet members by that action, by extension. Then there is the question whether or not they should stay in government. This is a process that's going to take 4, 5, 6 weeks, talking about the idea of whether or not you stay in government is a signal of instability as we go through those weeks. There's Labour has an obligation to its own organisation, and it's a very august and historic organisation, all of that, no disrespect. But it also has a great duty of care to the Irish people in all of this process. It's a very difficult, multifaceted thing. Then there's the relationship with Fine Gael. There's the eventual question of a reshuffle. So it's all a very, very difficult, multi-layered process.
Arthur Spring.
It certainly is difficult. And I think Fergus Finlay put it yesterday, whoever's going to take over is going to need Superman or Superwoman powers in
Absolutely.
Order to do this. I suppose I don't want to be somebody that goes into the Dáil and sees the Labour Party decimated, but the country recover, and then we hand over the reins in 2016 to another organisation. I this is kind of a hard thing to say to journalists, but I feel a little bit hard done by for Eamon Gilmore over the last couple of years. I don't know if all the communication problem was our own, but the ability of the Troika to put the country into reverse rather than put it into the forward gear was such that we had to cut and we had to tax. And how you're going to get popular and how you're going to get thanked for that is just beyond me. Oh. It's beyond an awful lot of people. And
we've been uphill and down Dáil on this one again, but I mean, I can't let it pass.
Yeah.
The ads, the reckless,
yeah. Yeah.
The reckless asinine promises, yeah. Which were never, ever realisable. I mean, yeah. Why those? Yeah. Secondly, mm-hmm. Then this has cropped up a few times, the way the Labour Party has
for 14 years in opposition, just always, you know, atavistically just attacked the government. Did it never occur to you you were going to be in a similar position pretty shortly on a difficult wicket? The kind of opposition, and Labour, as much as anyone else, contributed to this, which is absolutely pointless, just bull at a gate, abuse.
That's what it is.
You know?
That's unfortunate. That's what the opposition is. And you asked, why did those ads come out? I'd love to know why those ads come out. I have my own theory on it.
Do they not help you specifically to get elected?
To me, I would have been elected without those ads. Yeah. I can most certainly say that. I can tell you what I did recognise this, though, and I didn't put up any of those posters around Kerry that suggested those things. We had all the indications that I was getting elected well before that, and I had a positive sentiment coming towards me. But I can say this to you, that about 2 weeks before the general election, there was a consensus, and I think there might have been internal polls, and I haven't had this confirmed, that Fine Gael were going to get an overall majority. And I think people panicked, and they put out those. And I know, for example, that one of our senior ministers saw them, and he went crazy because he understood the economics and he understood the difficulties, and he said, that needs to be withdrawn immediately. You're doing something there that shouldn't be done. So that's the part of the consequences. If we're a victim of circumstances, that's a consequence of a circumstance we brought upon ourselves. But the vast, vast majority of promises that have been made have been kept. The programme for government, ironically, has actually been nearly fulfilled because we were looking at an economic crisis. Now we're looking at a social crisis of a kind. And the next 20 months or so need to be focused on, can we give something back to people? But we're still in a deficit position.
I'm just reading here, and Arthur, just in relation to your comment earlier on, Niamh, about the special advisers. Brendan Howland revealed that six advisers to six government ministers breached the cap. Three of the government ministers were himself, Joan Burton and Pat Rabbit.
I didn't know that, as I said.
What do you have to say to it now, though, in light of these?
Yeah, I didn't know it at all. I don't know who those people are now, but the breaches of that, to me, are news to me. I think I remember, so there's three Fine Gael and three Labour that were in breach of the caps. Mm. Well, why would you do that? I would agree with Niamh 100%. That's the kind of stuff, you don't tell people that you're going to do something and then not do it. It doesn't stack up.
Niamh?
Well, I mean, it's a problem. I mean, in terms of where they're going to go next, it's a case of trying to figure out what it is that what it is Labour stands for now, and is it going to just be a mugard, or is it going to be something else? And to try and get back to some sort of core ideals that people are people within the membership or people who vote for them are interested in. For a long time, Labour have been sort of positioning itself as being a liberal party. It's becoming more and more a party about social issues. The idea that Eamon Gilmore said, which is just that marriage equality was the greatest human rights issue facing Ireland at the moment, is not something that even most people who campaign morning, noon and night for marriage equality could agree with. It's ludicrous. And there's a level of detachment there that needs to be gotten over. So people need to, you know, think about what it is that Labour is supposed to stand for. Think about who it is that Labour is supposed to stand with, because Labour as a party shouldn't work for people. It should be the party of the people. And there's a sense in which there's a kind of a almost benevolent kind of do-gooding about some of what goes on in the parliamentary party at the moment that I think Labour needs to get over itself with if it is actually going to not be finished.
You make the point that there's no left anymore in the parliamentary party.
No, certainly if there is a left in the parliamentary party, they're keeping themselves, they're really hiding their light under a bushel. There was always a grouping within the parliamentary party which were pushing for more left-wing policies. And at the moment, there's a centre and there's a right of centre. So without any kind of pressure within the party itself, it seems as though there isn't any appetite for reconsidering that. And I mean, a lot of that is circumstances. A lot of that is people. There would have been a lot from the Democratic Left contingent who became very right wing, having left the Workers' Party, and there just isn't that that push. I mean, people like Emmett Stagg back in the day, who were a thorn in the side of people like Arthur's uncle, but they don't exist anymore. And there's a question of, you know, whether without that pressure, the mainstream of the party is going to be prepared to do anything. So they need to figure out what it is that they're doing before they decide who they want to do it
for. Okay. We are out of time, but thank you all very much indeed for joining us tonight. Niamh Purcell, Ray Kavanagh, Phil Prendergast, John Downing and Arthur Spring. We're back at 10 tomorrow night when we'll be discussing Brian Purcell's appearance before the Justice Committee tomorrow evening. He's the General Secretary of the Department. So join us for that if you can. 10 o'clock till then from all the team. Good night.
The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carvel, was produced by Kay Sheehy. Broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher is Richie Byrne, and sound supervision tonight was by Dave Gibson.